It's Monday, September 21st, 2020, just after market close in New York. This is the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Ash Bennington, joined shortly by our managing editor, Edward Harrison, in the next segment. Welcome back, Ed.
Thank you, Ash. A lot to talk about. I mean, just tons of things that are happening, not just in the political economy, but very volatile day in the markets. Let me just say before we go into everything, I was a little bit pleased to see that the Nasdaq ended out just about flat. So, you know, it was interesting to look at how the markets ended, that they didn't end on the lows or anything like that. So we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, it's one of those days where you need to be an optimist to make the point to say off the day's trading lows.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that's happening in the background, supposedly, that is influencing the markets, that are making the markets move in the direction that they're moving. You know, we're talking about oil. We're talking about gold, silver. We're also talking about equities and bonds. But I think that everyone's talking to what's happening in Europe in particular with the second wave of coronavirus cases and oil in particular taking a hit as a result of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Unfortunately, Britain now doubling every 7 days the number of COVID cases. Prime Minister Boris Johnson to chair a COBRA meeting. We've got a surge in Spain. Regional government officials in Madrid requesting access to the army to help them fight the virus. And additionally, a surge in Holland as well. And unfortunately, we've had another member here of our Real Vision team diagnosed with the virus, our editorial intern, Bryce Succoli, who I spoke to earlier in the day.
Yes, Ash, I had heard that you wanted to talk about his experience at college, but unfortunately, it's become a little bit more involved than that.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a look at the clip.
Bryce Succoli, Real Vision editorial intern, coming to us from the University of Miami. How are you feeling, Bryce?
Hi, Ash. I'm feeling pretty good today, but I just did find out today that I got diagnosed with COVID-19. I haven't been feeling well since Thursday or Friday of last week. This is a Monday today. I actually took two tests, and my third one came back positive. The first two came back negative. So it's a little bit of a shock to say, but I'm definitely managing it well so far.
So what happened? How did you know you were sick?
So on Thursday or Friday of last week, I just had a little bit of a sore throat, a cough here and there, maybe once an hour or so. And but Saturday morning, I woke up and just felt like I got hit by a truck. I could barely get out of bed all day and was just sleeping pretty much the whole day. Had a slight fever, chills, body aches, muscle aches, cough, sore throat, headache. Pretty much just not a great time.
Well, we're obviously glad to hear you're feeling better. Bryce, tell us, what's happening right now on campus? How widespread is this? What's going on? What's the feeling of the place where you are right now?
So right now, I'm actually a completely remote student. I am in Miami currently, but I take all my classes from my house where I live. On campus, from what I hear, it has been virtually lifeless. There's not too much going on campus. As a school, we've had 412 cases total, with 127 of them active right now. So as our student body is about 10,000, I would say the school is doing a pretty good job of keeping it under control.
What's the learning environment there like, Bryce? I mean, do you feel like you're getting kind of the education you need to get? I mean, obviously coping with the virus, but also trying to figure out how this impacts your career, your future, and the whole learning experience at college.
So it's honestly very different. My first two or so years, we were fully in person. There's no COVID-19. And then once March hit last year, we got sent home and had to do Zoom classes. Coming back this year, they gave us the option whether or not to take online, which I took. But it's definitely an adjustment, and it remains to be seen, in my opinion, how this pans out in the long run, if it will affect my education and my career at all.
Yeah. So how are people feeling at the school? What's the atmosphere there like? What's the social life like? Are people out? What's the general feeling on campus?
Social life has definitely taken a hit this semester. Miami isn't really we don't really have, it's not really a typical college town where there's bars people go to every weekend. It's more of the club scene, and those have been shut down in Florida for months at this point. So it's been definitely really different.
Yeah. And perhaps most important, are the students there taking this seriously? Are they maintaining social distance? Are they following quarantine? Are they doing what they need to do to protect themselves and other people from this disease?
Yeah, I'd say for the most part, students are doing what they should be doing. There's been no crazy outbreaks yet. Hopefully there isn't. But I think everybody here is responsible and is doing what they should be.
Yeah. Bryce, any final thoughts?
I just think that as a community, both as a university and as a global community, we need to continue our efforts to combat the virus in any way we can.
Listen, Bryce, you get some rest, take care of yourself, and we really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Ash.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, obviously a challenging situation. Ed, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first thing I'm thinking about is Bryce and his family, family and friends specifically, and hoping he gets better well as quickly as possible. But I'm also just thinking how it hits home because we know someone that this is happening to, not just in terms of coronavirus, but the concept of university during a pandemic and with coronavirus. I mean, all of it coming together in a very personal way.
Yeah, exactly. I should add, by the way, that Bryce is at the end of the call. I asked him if he wanted to review the video. He was like, no, dude, I got to go. I'm going to a class. So I didn't drag him out of bed to do that interview. Listen, Bryce is a terrific young guy, and fortunately he's in good health, and hopefully he'll be back to full steam soon.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's just a really tough slog because I remember we were talking to him about doing a segment like this, telling us what it's like at university. And he was saying, you know, I don't know when I'm going to be able to do it because I'm taking these exams over the weekend and so forth. I mean, it's a totally different experience that he's experiencing there. No partying whatsoever, no social experience, everything that is remote. Interestingly, I saw something on Axios today. About this, there was a poll. It said that 59% of people who attended classes in person say it was the right choice for the campus to reopen, compared to just 42% who have not. So Bryce is in the 42% versus people who actually are getting a much more sort of real college experience. More of them say actually, okay, yeah, it was the right thing to reopen. But in both cases, you know, 40% are not saying it's the right thing to do to actually be there.
Yeah, the other statistic from the Axios survey that I thought was interesting that they did, the survey question was, removing many temptations of campus life has made it easier to focus. 60% said they are learning less. 6% said they are learning more.
Yeah, so I mean, there are a lot of different ways that you can go with this. I think we started getting into this when we were talking about coronavirus cases increasing in Europe. We have our own specific case where, you know, someone's on campus getting coronavirus. The long hard slog is with us. I mean, it's not going away. We're really in the thick of it. The best thing that we can say is that we know how to deal with the virus better. I think that, you know, the mortality rate's down, but it's going to continue to be a problem that we have to adjust to for some time to come.
Yeah. And I think to come back to your central thesis over the last several months, this being the key time, the September, October timeframe. In fact, you were talking about how there was going to be an increase in volatility, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, let's go into that because that's what I was thinking about. Another Axios piece that I saw today that gave me some thought to piggyback off of, I don't know if you remember, but I was saying in the June timeframe, I wrote a post at Credit Write Downs on June the 16th saying the recession is over. And the way that I was looking at it was that the NBER, that's the National Bureau of Economic Research, said that there was a recession that began in February based on just a massive decline. They didn't wait for more. It was just clear that there was a recession much earlier than normal because of how massive the decline was. I feel like the uptick that we've seen is similarly large enough so that we know that actually we are out of recession. So that I said this already 3 months ago now. And so the Axios piece that I'm talking about is one from Felix Salmon, where he says, you know, the consensus now is that the recession is over. And the question is what does that mean? For me, the first thing that it means is to the degree that you're a bullish person, you're looking at the reopening rally as being a part of that. The recession being over means that the reason that you've seen the upside since June is because people are rallying on the back of the recession being over. But now the question is where do we go from here? And I think this is where the volatility comes into play. This is what I'm saying is that I felt like the differential from June to September and October is enough that we're going to get a lot more clarity in terms of where earnings are going, what the steady state is for the economy going forward, irrespective of the fact that the virus is with us. This is the time, especially given the political economy in the United States with the election on November the 3rd.
Yeah, and now the additional challenge politically with the passing, unfortunately, of Ruth Bader Ginsburg over the weekend, and that adds another dimension. Obviously, it's a difficult time for the country. A respected jurist who served for decades on the high court, but it's 2020. It's an election year, and like everything else, this adds another layer to the political calculus.
Yeah, and I would say that I could never have imagined how I don't know if you know that there was an earthquake in California, but you know we had earthquakes. We've had floods. We've had fires. We've had all sorts of hurricanes. It's just it's unbelievable. 2020 is the year of apocalyptic type of activity. I can't wait until it just calms down and we get beyond this level of volatility. But irrespective, we knew that we were going to have some volatility just from a political economy perspective going forward. And I think also from a market perspective, given what the long range outcome is. But all this extra volatility, including Bader Ginsburg, adds to the sense that November 3rd is a big day, that things will change dramatically there, potentially the tone of the market as well.
Yeah, and it appears that we could be in for some significant battling on the floor of the United States Senate even before November 3rd.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let's gloss over the whole part about the political economy and think of it just from a purely market perspective, because this is the Felix Salmon part that I find very interesting. He talks about, and you and I, we've talked about this before, we talk about the Citi Economic Surprise Index. He talks about the surprises. He says that, he talks about the Fed. He says that the Fed, back in June, they expected that when the year ended, we would have 9.3% unemployment and the economy would shrink 6.5%. Now, today, with coronavirus deaths still at their June levels, the Fed is even more more optimistic than they were in June. So they see a 7.6% number instead of 9.3 and only a 3.7% decline instead of a 6.5. Still a very large decline, but you can see that the numbers have gone up. And Salmon puts it in perspective. He says that's in 3 million extra jobs and more than $600 billion in economic activity over and above what the Fed expected just 3 months ago. And so I'm trying to cast this from a bullish perspective in terms of from June to September. That's sort of that's where the Fed's gone. That's also where Wall Street has gone. That is, you know, some of the fuel for the fire for equities to rise over that period of time.
Yeah. And we've spoken about this in the past. Obviously, we talked about it today. I'm wondering if you have thoughts about the almost manic depressive nature of this market, overestimating in one direction, overestimating a snapback. What are your thoughts about the trajectory of the recovery now that we seem, as Felix points out, to be out of recession?
Yeah, this is going to be a long-winded answer. I think that the best way for me to think about it is in terms of jobless claims, because we talk about this a lot, initial jobless claims. I've been pounding the table since April that initial jobless claims that were being put out were using a multiplicative factor in order to deal with a jump scale increase in jobless claims, and that was just distorted. 5 months later, four and a half months later, we got a change based upon that. And so to me, that gives you a sense of how difficult it has been to estimate what's going on. The data are all over the place. It's very difficult to really get a handle on what's happening. And so I fully understand that people might move in one direction excessively. So we did get to a point where there was a lot of pessimism about the numbers in an extreme way, but I can understand that. But yeah. Equally, I believe that when we have the surprises to the upside because we were too pessimistic, we're going to get the same in the reverse. So the improvement that we're expecting now, I think, is starting to get to the point where it's overdone. That is I'll give you an example. Wall Street, quarterly GDP growth, they thought in April that we're going to see a bounce back in Q3 of 13%. By June, that number bounced up to 18%. Now it's 25%. So to me, that 25% represents sort of the high water mark in terms of we're really bullish. I think that the numbers for Q4 in particular are going to underperform relative to expectations, and maybe even Q3 at this point. So I think that's my long-winded way of saying that we really went up in terms of, exceeding expectations. Now we're going to move and mean revert in terms of exceeding expectations.
Yeah. You know, as you pointed out from the initial jobless claims filing coming out of Department of Labor, we've never actually seen swings this dramatic before. And that's precisely the reason why the factoring of those claims wasn't able to be adjusted properly. And you were way ahead of the curve on pointing that out before the Department of Labor actually adjusted the figures.
Right. Yeah. And so it just points out that we don't have the systems. We haven't had the systems to deal with something of this magnitude. And it makes it clear that, you're going to get this level of volatility as a result of that. But if people think that that's over, they're mistaken. I think that there's more to come in terms of the surprises that are ahead. And for me, the most important thing is that the surprises ahead are going to be in a world of more information as opposed to less. Before, we got surprises ahead because companies were saying, no, we're not going to give you our earnings numbers. We're not going to make any forecasts. But now increasingly, they're going to tell you more information. And then we'll have to see whether or not they make those estimates or whether they underperform or overperform.
Yeah. And to precisely that point, U.S. equity markets, S&P 500 closed off today about 1.2%, settling below the 33 handle, which it lost at 32.81 today.
Yeah. So, looking forward, we have the stake in the ground September, October, where we're saying that there's going to be volatility. That doesn't necessarily mean that stocks will go down a lot or even permanently. We've already had a drawdown of over 10% on the NASDAQ. But it's not clear to me that that's going to continue over the longer term. However, I believe that the real economy data that we get, the earnings data that we get now over this month and next month, and including all of the political economy fallout from the election here in the United States, all of that will combine to tell us whether or not we were overbought through the August timeframe, or whether or not we can continue to power forward. I tend to take the view that the numbers are we got ahead of ourselves too much, and it's going to be very difficult for us to expect more upside. But I'm open to the possibility that we could see upside.
Yeah, on the NASDAQ, losing less today than the S&P on a percentage basis, off about 0.1% to settle ultimately at the 10,778 level on the NASDAQ.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, actually, when you looked at the correction today, most of it was in the Dow, less of it was in the S&P, and the least was in the NASDAQ. And also, by the way, we saw Microsoft with a great merger announcement, their second biggest takeover in history, and also Nikola, the chairman, stepping down, the guy who founded the company. You know, their stock was down like 20% today. So a lot of things are happening out there, but somehow the NASDAQ was able to do, relatively speaking, pretty well. To me, it points out that it's not a done deal that this rally's over, but we are going to see more volatility.
Yeah, and something of a reversal of a trend or the pattern in terms of the distribution of the downside on a day where there are losses.
Right. Yeah. So I find the whole Nikola thing very interesting in terms of the bezel, that if it turns out to be that Nikola is completely fraudulent in some capacity, it will be a watershed in terms of how to think about some of these market darlings that have seen their valuations vault upward.
Yeah. And, you know, the CEO of Nikola, obviously a very sort of powerful and charismatic figure, someone who had been who personally had gotten out in front of the rise and had been a major factor, I think it's fair to say, in the company receiving the level of attention that it did. So his withdrawal from the scene today, huge news.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think it would be interesting, you know, to see what some of the people who are short sellers, people who are looking at it from a different direction or thinking. One guy who I'd like to see on the Real Vision platform coming forward, and I'm working behind the scenes to see if we can do something about it, is Jim Chanos. What does he think about this market? Because he had a lot to say during the great financial crisis before. You know, he was also a guy who was onto the frauds during the WorldCom days. What does he see right now? I'd love to find out what he's talking about, where he thinks that there might be some short selling opportunities in this market. Is it the places that we're talking about now, or does he see a different locus of bezel that has been taken?
Yeah, I would love to hear his insights in terms of the specifics, and also just generally his framework, how he's looking at these markets, how he's thinking about it, how he's assessing this time that we're going through right now. Jim Chanos, of course, has been on the platform before with Jim Grant, a terrific interview, but it would be great to have him back.
Yeah, and you know, the point is that you're getting in front of a freight train when you're dealing with some of these companies. It's very difficult to deal with markets when they're parabolic in this way. And by the way, let me just say as well, as I say that, I'm thinking about an interview I did with Ben Anker, who earlier today, this will come out on Thursday. He's the head of asset allocation at GMO. That's the firm that Jeremy Grantham founded. Very interesting comments he has to say about value versus growth, about Tesla in particular. You know, we talked about Amazon, we talked about Apple. Great conversation. It really helps for me, you know, put in perspective how someone who has a sort of longer term value investing time frame, how they're looking for it. Let me just give you the sort of the 50,000 foot view is that he thinks that, you know, right now, the differential between growth and value is as extreme as it has been since the dot-com bubble. So there's an opportunity in that. Very good conversation. I think that people will be very interested in seeing that.
Yeah, that's obviously the value versus growth is a topic that we've been interested in here at Real Vision for some time, and it is a fascinating one. And I would just add, to jump back on the short seller idea, recently had Mark Cahotes on the platform talking with Raul about the mega trends that he sees happening right now in the space.
Yeah, it's funny, as we're closing this segment out, just a number of things are jumping out at us in terms of what's on the platform. It jumped out at me that we haven't even mentioned the fact that we are now into the beginning. Today is the first day, in fact, Ash, of our content campaign where we're talking about how have things changed? Have things changed forever? Have things changed permanently is the real question. And we lead it off with Raul. He has an update in terms of the unfolding. That's his view of how this whole thing is playing out in three parts. You had the liquidity phase. You have the hope phase, which he believes we're in now, potentially moving toward the so-called insolvency phase. That's where the shakeout will happen. And very compelling piece that he did. That's the first piece in this content campaign we have. It's going to run for the rest of this week and then next week. Ben Inker is a part of that. I told him that, you know, we're looking at it from that framework. And so very good discussions we have with commercial real estate from Deloitte tomorrow. A lot of good conversations coming up on the platform going forward.
Yeah, and of course, I'm continuing to cover the crypto beat closely. I've got a piece out today with Jeff Dorman that's really terrific of Arca, talking about the digital asset market that I thought was really his framework. I thought was really something that was quite compelling and an interesting way of just slicing up the space and thinking about it. So I think a good piece as well.
So that's all from me today. Just hoping that Bryce has a strong road to recovery. Looking forward to seeing how my thesis holds up over the next 2 months. That's pretty much all that's on my mind today.
Hey, Ed, before I let you go, though, I've got to ask you, European bank consolidation stories, what do you think about this, man? I mean, UBS and Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank and Commerce Bank being rumored. I mean, this is not coming from a position of strength, is it?
No, you know, and I find it interesting. I don't have a strong view as yet. I asked Ben Inker about this, and he had an interesting, somewhat contrarian take. And I think he was looking at it in a completely an investor's take. That is that when stocks are beaten up, when sectors are beaten up, sometimes there are opportunities there. Things overshoot, maybe. We've gotten into that section of the market for the financials. I thought that was a very interesting take. Yeah. I'm interested to see what people think of that interview in particular. So I'm still noodling on that right now in terms of how to think about Europe versus the United States, European banks versus American banks, and then the financial sector as a part of value versus growth in terms of that dichotomy. He had some interesting things to say about stripping out banks, actually, when they do, you know, those kinds of exercises for other reasons. But that's sort of in the back of my mind when you ask that question. So I don't have a real answer, unfortunately, to give you. But I think it's really interesting, honestly, and very interesting from a regulatory perspective. Credit Suisse and UBS.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting start to the conversation, and we're going to be watching it very closely here on RVDB and elsewhere on the platform. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Good to talk to you as usual, Ash.
Bryce, feel better soon.